The House will come to order. Please stand if you're able. Our flag salute will be led by Representative Riley.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing. Our opening ceremonies this morning will be presented by Roberto Arciniega, who's the Hispanic missioner with the Episcopal Diocese of Oregon, based in Tualatin. Welcome, Roberto.
Eternal Spirit, Earth Maker, Pain Bearer, Live Life Giver, Source of all that is seen and it shall be, Father and Mother of us all, loving God in whom is heaven, the hallowing of your name echoed through the universe, the way of your justice be followed by the peoples of the world, your heavenly will be done by all created beings, your commonwealth of peace and freedom sustain our hope in common earth. With the bread we need for today, feed us. And the hurts we absorb from each other, forgive us. In times of temptation and test, strengthen us. From trials too great to endure, spare us. From the grip of all that is evil, free us. For you reign in glory of the power that is love, now and forever. Espíritu eterno, creador de la tierra, dador de vida, señor de lo cerca y lejano, fuente de lo que es y lo que será, padre y madre de todos nosotros por quien se vive, Dios de amor en quien está el cielo, la santidad de tu nombre resuena como eco por todo el universo. Que el camino de tu justicia sea seguido por todas las gentes del mundo. Que tu celeste deseo sea hecho por todos los seres creados. Que tu herencia de paz y libertad sea el sostén de nuestra esperanza y llegue a nosotros. Con el pan que necesitamos para el día de hoy, aliméntanos. Por el dolor que nos causamos unos a otros, perdónanos. En los momentos de tentación y prueba, danos fuerza. En las tribulaciones tan grandes para soportar, ayúdanos. De la garra de todo lo que es maligno, líbranos. Por tu reino en la gloria de poder que es amor, ahora y por siempre. Amén.
Courtesies, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to welcome an honorary page this morning. Her name is, if she'd stand, Dahlia Andre. She goes to Leslie Middle School. She's in the eighth grade. She's 14. She wants to be a nurse or a law student, and I'm happy to have her helping me out at my desk this morning. And please give courtesy and welcome to my page.
We also want to recognize several pages who are guests of Representative Comp, who unfortunately is away because of the Ways and Means hearing. I ask them each to stand as well as I introduce them. Mario Ortiz from the Academy of International Studies in the 10th grade, hopes to be a doctor or an engineer. Welcome. Next, Esther Rodriguez from the same school in the same grade, also a sophomore, hopes to go to law school. Welcome. Moises Chavez from the French Prairie Middle School, who's a sixth grader, wants his career goal is to go into the FBI. Welcome. Alejandro Esparza from Valor Middle School, a sixth grader, wants to be an ATF agent. We'll have to hook you up with Representative Barker, Representative Krieger, and Representative Olson. Next up, Jennifer Casas from Jervis Middle School, an eighth grader. Very active in the yearbook there, and wants to be an actor. Look out, Representative Gilliam. Next up, Melissa Casas, also from Jervis Middle School, a sixth grader, hopes to be a reporter. Welcome. And finally, excuse me for mispronouncing your name, Antilana Selena Ramirez, who's a sixth grader at Valor Middle School. She's very active in track and wants to be a model, an actor, and a traveler. Very good. Welcome to all of our pages. We appreciate your service to the house today. Further courtesies. Let's move on to our moment in Oregon sesquicentennial history. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's History Minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Floyd McKay, who is the Emeritus Professor of Journalism at Western Washington University. Charles Sprague. Charles A. Sprague published and edited the Oregon Statesman for 40 years. During that period, he was Oregon's leading statesman, serving as governor, alternate delegate to the United Nations, and throughout the 20th century, speaking for the progressive wing of the Republican Party. Sprague was a surprise entry into the 1938 governor's race, the beneficiary of a split in the Democratic Party. The beginning of World War II overshadowed Sprague's term as governor. Concentrating on bringing Oregon into the war effort, he proved to be a poor campaigner and was beaten in 1942 Republican primary by the popular Secretary of State Earl Snell. Sprague's term was marked by the state's first forestry rules. Returning to the Statesman in 1943, Sprague began his one-page column, It Seems to Me, which ran daily for 25 years and firmly established him as the state's most prestigious editor. The column was required reading for state politicians and bureaucrats. President Harry S. Truman appointed him in 1952 as an alternate delegate to the United Nations, where he was alternate to Eleanor Roosevelt. He passed away at the age of 81 on March 13, 1969.
Any further courtesies? The clerk will now open the voting system to verify the presence of a quorum. Representative Esquivel. Representative Esquivel. Representative Garrett. Representative Garrett. Excused today, Representative Beyer, Representative Buckley, Representative Chris Edwards, Representative David Edwards, Representative Galizio, Representative Girard, Representative Gilman, Representative Holvey, Representative Jensen, Representative Comp, Representative Nathanson, Representative Richardson, Representative Shields, and Representative Thatcher, and Representative Matthews. As you know, we have many members gone today because of our Ways and Means field hearings, which were last night in Ashland and coming this afternoon in Eugene. A quorum is present. Message from the governor. Message from the Senate. First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3489, relating to fish hatcheries and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3490, relating to agricultural theft.
Bills read for the first time are passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 2191, relating to debt management services and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2306, relating to exemptions from execution and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2383, relating to facility sales and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2434, relating to actions involving improvements to real property. House Bill 2507, relating to completion of high school and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2585, relating to class actions and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2702, relating to prescription authority for licensed psychologists and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2790, relating to board on public safety standards and training. House Bill 2821, relating to use of vacation leave during period of family leave. House Bill 2874, relating to victims of crime. House Bill 2970, relating to exemption utilization of the earned income tax credit and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2988, relating to voluntary central background registry. House Bill 3116, relating to financing for community college districts. House Bill 3219, relating to smoking. House Bill 3273, relating to domestic violence programs. House Bill 3463, relating to biodiesel and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the second time were passed the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. Third reading of House Bills. The clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 2014, relating to school construction taxes and prescribing an effective date.
The question now rises upon third reading final passage of House Bill 2014A. Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2014 comes from Revenue Committee, the unanimous vote. In 2007, the legislature authorized school districts to impose a new tax on construction in their districts. Some difficulty arose around collection of those taxes. This bill is a consensus compromise bill amongst stakeholders. It requires that the collection of school district construction taxes by state agencies or other permit-issuing authority bodies increases the maximum administration collective fee for that body from 1 to 4%, and it exempts construction of nonprofit long-term residential care facilities and nonprofit continuing care retirement communities from this new taxation. Good bill. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Call, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. House Bill 2014A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2136, relating to vending machines distributing tobacco products.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2136A. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2136A prohibits the sale of tobacco products in vending machines, with one exception. It permits the sale of tobacco products via a vending machine inside those places that are restricted to persons of 21 years or older, such as a bar or a tavern. And that was an amendment that was added late in the committee. I urge your support of this piece of legislation, and let's move it to the Senate. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Maurer, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Harker votes aye. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. House Bill 2136A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2308, relating to discharge of estate fiduciary from personal liability for inheritance tax and prescribing an effective date.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2308A. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
House Bill 2308 comes from the Revenue Committee on a unanimous vote. It requires the Oregon Department of Revenue to issue a closing letter within 18 months after inheritance tax return is filed, so that a fiduciary may distribute the assets and close the file knowing that there will be no additional tax due. Likewise, the period prescribed for the Department of Revenue to allow or make a refund is also called out as being 2 years. This is a good bill. It allows estates to close as opposed to remaining open for unlimited amounts of time. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Benz, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. House Bill 2308A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 2366 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Monday, May 4th, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2502 relating to criminal procedure and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2502A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. House Bill 2502 deals with the seizure of business records and then also has a portion in the statute or in the bill that deals with criminal forfeiture as it applies to restitution. And what I'd like to do is just take a moment with you and walk through the bill with you a little bit, how this bill changes the current law. House Bill 2502 relates to the existing criminal process authorizing the seizure or the production of business records in criminal matters. This legislation is modeled after a bill that passed unanimously in the Washington State Legislature last year. House Bill 2502 amends the process for obtaining business records from businesses. In any criminal matter, it allows a prosecutor or a defense attorney to obtain business records from a business doing business in Oregon, even if the records or the business is located outside of the state. This bill allows the prosecution or the defense, when seeking business records from a business, to serve subpoenas, orders, or warrants by mail, fax, or email, provided that the method used allows for proof of delivery. Some key points of the legislation: it allows prosecutors and defense attorneys to obtain out-of-state business records that are relevant to a criminal case in Oregon. Business records are often vital evidence in criminal cases. For the criminal justice system to work properly, prosecutors and defense attorneys must have access to business records and be able to use them in court. For example, business records are essential in identity theft cases as well as cases involving crimes committed via the Internet. The business records of many businesses that conduct transactions in Oregon are located in another state. For example, the records of an Internet service provider such as Yahoo. The current process for obtaining business records in another state is time-consuming, expensive, and in some circumstances where a search warrant is required, non-existent. Keep in mind, this impacts only businesses that have subjected themselves to Oregon's jurisdictions by doing business in Oregon. Second point that I want to bring to your attention is it allows for admissibility of records verified by records custodian without testimony. This change in law will relieve businesses of the burden of appearing to testify regarding the authenticity of their business records in Oregon court. The business can instead provide an affidavit or declaration attesting to the authenticity of the records. The bill protects the rights of the parties by providing a business for a party opposing the admission of the records to challenge their admission and to still require the business a representative to appear if necessary. But in the majority of cases, this will not be necessary. And the third point I want to make is it eliminates the requirement that police officer be present for execution of search warrants on businesses. This new process also allows the state to obtain records from a business by a search warrant when it is not practical for a police officer to execute the search warrant. For example, business records are often stored on computer servers that law enforcement cannot access without the assistance of business. The model for this type of business warrant already exists in Oregon for the execution of search warrants for the financial records of financial institution under ORS 192-570. And then the last part that I'd like to share with you regarding what this House bill does is Section 4, because it just goes a little different direction from what I just shared with you regarding the business records. Section 4 makes a moderate change to ORS 131-588. Currently, the law authorizes the court to pay restitution to victims of crimes if the conviction is a person felony or a person Class A misdemeanor. This has been a problem, and let me give you an example why it is a problem right now. A suspect takes or embezzles money from a victim, then uses that money to purchase property. Current law allows for that property to be subject of criminal forfeiture. Here lies the problem. The district attorney's office is unable to retain or return any proceeds to the victim as a result of the criminal asset forfeiture. What Section 4 of House Bill 2502 does is provide the state the ability to make the motion before the court should there be any proceeds from a criminal forfeiture, that portion of the proceeds be directed as restitution to the victim. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
I told Nolan right when I got here, but I drove up that morning from Roseburg, so I literally walked in the door and Nolan was like, hey, we're going to do this. And then she came up here, but it wasn't perfect timing. Because we're trying pretty hard.
Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Widener votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. House Bill 2502A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2700, relating to claims for property tax exemption and prescribing an effective date.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2700A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, a couple years ago, I got a call from a church in my district who had bought some property and because of a volunteer mistake, and volunteers do this, had not timely applied for a property tax exemption and ended up paying a significant amount of property taxes for 1 year. It cost them precious dollars, and there wasn't a whole lot I could do about it. But subsequently, somebody else called and said that they had a similar problem. And then later, I learned that in the divestiture of the properties of the Catholic Church, this kind of problem had cropped up all across the state, where volunteers, well-meaning people in churches and nonprofits did not realize their need to file in a timely manner for property tax exemptions. So over the interim, I sat down with the Department of Revenue and my county assessor to try and figure out if we could craft a fix for this that would make some sense. So what you see before you is a glide path for first-time property tax exemption filers. It isn't for everybody to go back and start all over. It gives them a little more wiggle room, and it mostly gives our assessors a little more wiggle room, so they don't have to be the ones that say, oh, well, there might have been a screw-up here, but you still have to pay all this property tax. There is no fiscal on this because it is not going back to try and fix problems in the past. It's only prospective. I think it will help both nonprofits who are dependent on volunteers to do a lot of this work, and churches. It will also help the assessors with some clear statutory guidelines or when they can give a little more time. It doesn't give anybody anything more than a little bit more time and make it clear throughout the state what the procedure should be for all the assessors. It's a good bill. I think it'll help all the parties concerned. It costs us nothing, and I urge an aye vote.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close? Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kettemer, how do you vote? Kettemer votes aye. Representative Wisnett votes aye. Representative Cameron votes aye. House Bill 2700A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2738, relating to vehicles taken into custody by public bodies.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2738A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. House Bill 2738 comes to you from the Judiciary Committee, where it was unanimously supported. Fiscal impact is minimal. Chapter 819 of the Motor Vehicle Code, as it applies to disabled and abandoned vehicles, can be at best complicated. In fact, it can be outright confusing. What House Bill 2738 does is to simplify and streamline the process an agency that causes an abandoned or disabled vehicle removed can move on. Under current law, if the state police, for example, is the agency taking custody of the vehicle, the respective patrol office delivers the paperwork to the respective sheriff of the county in which the vehicle was abandoned in. It is the responsibility of sheriff to dispose of the vehicle should it not be reclaimed. Over time, this process has been streamlined. Now most state police offices dispose their own tows, as do sheriffs and local police departments. In many cases, the towing company who removed the vehicle handles the disposal process. The intention of the bill is to have this streamlined process codified in statute. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close?
No, thank
you. He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Olson votes aye. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. Representative Kettemer, how do you vote? Kettemer votes aye. House Bill 2738A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2795, relating to diesel engines.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2795A. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 2795 comes unanimously from the House Committee on Environment and Water. This bill requires that all Oregon diesel school buses manufactured between 1994 and 2006 are retrofitted by 2017. It also requires that all Oregon diesel school buses manufactured before 1994 are replaced by 2025. Members of the 3,700 diesel school buses in Oregon, 70% are emitting hazardous exhaust. This bill aims to correct that over time. Children riding buses are exposed to this exhaust, causing respiratory ailments such as asthma. In Washington State, school districts retrofitted their buses and experienced dramatic reductions in hospital emissions due to asthma or bronchitis. Many Oregon school districts are already using available federal and state grant funding to retrofit their buses. The schedule proposed in this bill, it conforms with the schedules that districts have for retrofitting and replacing their diesel buses. This bill gives districts plenty of time to find funding sources while ensuring that Oregon kids are protected from unnecessary, harmful diesel exhaust, and I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cannon, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Representative Wisnett votes aye. House Bill 2795A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2809, related to urban renewal plans and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2809A. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please control your enthusiasm this morning as I read this technical bill about urban renewal. HB 2809 is a technical fix with permissive language that allows cities that were stuck in the standard rate for an urban renewal area through a technicality when the law was changed to opt into the reduced rate. The reduced rate allows for assessments enacted after the URA was established to be outside the frozen base. This helps preserve the intent of the assessment and allows cities to more efficiently manage their URA. This is only known to apply to two cities in Oregon. If this is clear as mud, I appreciate an aye vote. If you do have serious questions, my colleague up front from the inner east side of Portland will be happy to answer your questions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Huffman, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Reed votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Greenlick votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Representative Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 2809A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3051, related to driving while under the influence of intoxicants.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3051A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, once again. And colleagues, House Bill 3051 comes to you from Judiciary Committee, and under the implied consent law, a person is deemed to have given consent to a urine test when, after being arrested for a DUI, an officer believes that the person is under the influence of a controlled substance or inhalant. ORS 813.131 and 132 are the provisions of the implied consent law that govern urine testing in the context of a DUI charge. House Bill 2290 would clarify that urinalysis evidence obtained is admissible in court when the testing is performed in a licensed or accredited lab. And I can assure you that the Oregon State Police Crime Lab is accredited. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson does not wish to close. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Dembro, how do you vote? Dembro, Representative Dembro votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gilliam votes aye. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes aye. House Bill 3051A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3118, related to hiring practices of institutions of higher education.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3118A. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you today House Bill 3118, reported with a unanimous due pass recommendation from the House Education Committee. House Bill 3118 would simply require Oregon's public universities to interview a qualified minority candidate when there's a job opening for the athletic director position or that of a head coach in any sport. This was modeled after the National Football League's Rooney Rule, which has resulted in a much closer minority distribution among the candidates of the Pro Football League than we have in college football. Skipping the affirmative action process has had the effect of denying job opportunities to highly qualified coaches from all backgrounds, and especially to minority candidates. This is a real problem because these jobs are among the best paying and highest profile jobs in our state. We believe not only is this a fair and appropriate thing to do, but that it will increase the pool of head coaching candidates from around the country once minority candidates believe they're going to have a fair shot at competing for a job in Oregon. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, perception is reality, and a perception is that we don't give minorities an opportunity to even apply for positions at some schools in this state. Oregon would be the first state in the country to adopt the Rooney Rule, which is the NFL's obligation that NFL teams at least interview minority candidates. In a previous life in the mid to late 90s, I worked at a Division I school, was an NCAA compliance officer for Northern Illinois University, worked in athletics and operations, was involved with hiring a D1 coach, and in that process we interviewed a minority candidate. And I wasn't involved with the reasoning for that. The gentleman didn't get the job, and the coach that was hired was ultimately was a great decision, retired 2 years ago. And, you know, you can look at this as a nanny state bill. You can look at it as, oh, this is only, quote, affirmative action. But the reality is that the universities shouldn't have to be told to do this stuff. They should just do it anyway. At some point, you step up to the plate as a legislator and say, folks, you're not doing it. We're going to use our power and say that you have to do it. Thank you, Senator. I urge you to look deep in your soul and ask yourself what kind of a state we're going to be. Are we going to be a state from the 60s and the 50s and the 40s, where Oregon didn't have a real good history? Or are we going to be a state that is actually going to step out in front and take a lead on this issue? You know, maybe in 10 or 15 years, we can come back and repeal this law, and everybody will laugh about how useless it was. But today, I don't think it's useless. I urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
The character yields.
He does.
Maybe I should be yielding under that characterization. Sorry that I didn't get you this question in advance, good representative. I'm just wondering, I guess my question is a characterization question, and would you characterize what this bill is doing as bestowing a right upon applicants for coaching or positions within our university system?
No, I would not characterize that. I would characterize it as bestowing an opportunity. We asked the the minority coaches what they thought about this. There's a Black Coach Association thing. And they said, we said to them, what if this is perceived as a tokenism? It's just a token. Would you still want to be interviewed? And their answer was unanimously, yes, they would. They want a chance to fight for a job. They want a chance to compete. They're competitors. They're athletes. And they believe, given an opportunity to get in the game, they have a fair chance of winning it. And that's all they're asking for, is a chance to compete.
Further discussion, Representative Kenner.
To the bill.
To the bill.
After quite a bit of personal soul-searching, I'm going to be a no vote. And I think very fundamentally I agree with, I think, the purpose of this. But, you know, we have in our lives what we call marker events. These are things that change the way we view the world and the way we operate. 1975, as a new Ph.D., I was teaching some part-time classes at Mount Hood Community College. And during the course of that, a full-time position was announced. And I thought, wow, that's right up my alley, and I've been doing a good job as a young, new part-time instructor. And I went to the dean, and I said, you know, I'm thinking about applying for this position. And he says, you know, that's too bad, because you're doing a terrific job, and I think you'd be a terrific psychology professor. But I would encourage you not to apply, because you're the wrong sex and the wrong color. That's verbatim. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. Thank you. I spent 22 years as an equal opportunity employer, and it was my obligation to be an equal opportunity employer. And I certainly can sympathize with Representative Kenner for feeling that way, because that's not an equal opportunity employer. But being an equal opportunity employer means that you give everybody a chance to demonstrate that they're qualified regardless of sex, race, color, creed, religion, etc. And that's what this is about. And as a mother of a male coach in a women's sport, I want my kid to have the equal opportunity as well.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Greenlink, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. I've been asked a question. How does one find out whether a candidate is a minority candidate or not? And I really would like to respond to that from my experiences 10 years as a department chair at the Oregon Health Sciences University, where whenever I was hiring, I needed to follow affirmative action rules. I needed to show that I had made a good faith effort to find qualified minority candidates. I needed to explain how I had done it, where I had advertised, who I had responded to. And I used information that came in the application to make sure that I was including in my search at least one qualified minority candidate, or more if there were more qualified candidates. Right now there are university rules for doing this, and the problem in the athletic departments is they're not following the university's rules. I have in front of on your desk a letter from a former University of Oregon coach and the director of academic advising and student services at the University of Oregon. In his letter supporting this bill, he points out it is an absolute travesty that over the past 6 months or so, the University of Oregon has appointed a new athletic director, a new football coach, two assistant football coaches, a new women's basketball coach, and a new associate head coach for men's basketball, all with complete disregard for the equal opportunity employment principles. Where is the administrative oversight relative to allowing these six travesties to happen? When you ask somebody how does an athletic director get a waiver from affirmative action, they simply send an email and they're given an answer, waived, and they can go ahead and hire the candidate they decided in advance. If I did that as an academic administrator at any university, if I sent my the equal employment opportunity person in the university, an email that said, I've already decided who I want to hire, so can I please avoid all the usual regulations of the university? I'd have gotten back an email saying something like, are you out of your mind? I mean, this is simply asking the athletic departments to follow what are the existing rules in the universities. I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes no. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. House Bill 3118A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3123, relating to the release of substances by passenger vessels.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3123A. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3123 at its heart is a policy statement that says that Oregon's coastal waters should be clean and safe for all Oregonians. Currently, Oregon is the missing link on the West Coast. California, Washington, Alaska all have tough regulations to prevent cruise ships and other passenger vessels from dumping sewage and other hazardous waste into territorial waters. House Bill 3123 addresses that by creating a study by the Department of Environmental Quality to make recommendations that would align Oregon's law with law in surrounding states. The bill has no fiscal impact and had the unanimous support of the Environment and Water Committee.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bailey, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Van Orman, how do you vote? Van Orman votes aye. Representative Garrett votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Representative Tomei is off the floor. House Bill 3123A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3151, relating to vehicle transfer.
The question now rises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 3151A. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3151A is brought to you today by myself and Representative Riley, along with Senator Bonamici, who I believe is still visiting from the other end of the building here. It is on behalf of a constituent of mine, Mr. Rick Tosh. Mr. Tosh wrote to me in September of 2008 describing an awful situation where a vehicle he had previously sold 6 years before was towed, and he was hauled into court and had to pay $1,000 to the company that had towed the vehicle and stored it for 1 month. I want to quote very briefly from the email that he sent me. Whereas I don't like it, I can afford it, but my outrage at money being stolen from the poor women before me in line for the same offense, quote-unquote, demands that I complain to you and everyone else in government. Government is responsible to protect the innocent and the poor, and she is both. Colleagues, I believe we have the opportunity today to correct a small error in the statute, and this is our opportunity to do so. The current system depends upon the new owner to register the vehicle, releasing the previous owner from liability, and some buyers fail to do so. This bill adds language to the Oregon statute enabling a seller to obtain a receipt of transfer from the DMV. House Bill 3151A passed out of consumer protection with a unanimous do-pass recommendation, and I would thank you for an aye vote on it.
Further discussion. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is not the best bill it could be. There are opportunities in the future to strengthen this and make it even more user-friendly, if you will. But we don't want to let perfect get in the way of good. I think this is a good bill, and I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Harker, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Representative Barton, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative, that's everyone. House Bill 3151A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3367, relating to lighting fixtures and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3367A. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Here in Oregon, we're absurdly rich with nature, and we work hard to preserve our environment and future generations. At the same time, we also try and do conservation wherever we can. And what you have is a bill in front of you that does two things. It helps protect the night sky for people to view stars, and it helps save enormously on power costs. When one wants to light a space, a football field, a parking lot, some other space, there are two ways to do it. One way is to have omnidirectional lighting, lights that go everywhere, and put as much light as possible down onto the space. And the other way is to have unidirectional lighting, shielded lighting that points light in one direction, down to the ground, and only puts enough electricity onto the ground to serve the purpose that is necessary to serve. If you see modern sports facilities, for example, the new Tualatin Hills Park and Recreation Facility on the Rock Creek campus at Portland Community College, it's very carefully designed so that light goes down, not up, and doesn't bounce because the neighbors were objecting to too much light coming into their neighborhood when all you wanted to do was to light a sports field. When you do it correctly, you save about half of the electricity costs. What this bill does, it's a simple bill that encourages, with public buildings, the use of shielded lighting and the proper direction of focusing light, and it helps utilities make those things available to their customers. And one other thing, it outlaws those terrible mercury vapor lights that are a big problem nowadays whenever practical. It's a straightforward bill. It had the unanimous vote of the Environment Committee. It's supported by the utilities, by architects, by the state departments that are involved, the State Department of Energy and others, and I encourage your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Greenlick, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. Representative Stigler, how do you vote? Stigler votes aye. Representative Cameron, how do you votes aye. Representative Springer votes aye. House Bill 3367A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3451, relating to ballots.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3451A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. 3451 is a bill that would allow your county elections offices in our counties to start tallying the votes that they have received 7 days prior to the election. The requirements for security are being developed and have been developed by the Secretary of State. There is one system that currently is allowed to do this because it produces no tallies as the ballots are going through, and you have to do a separate function in order to get the numbers out. We have checked, we believe, and the Secretary of State's office requires a plan for them, so that the same kind of safeguard will exist in the other counties, and they have talked with each of the counties because the issue is making sure that this information is secure and there is no advance notice in any way for any member of the group that's there to get that information and share that prior to 8 o'clock on election day. The committee heard much testimony, had many questions about how do we make sure that this is that the systems are in place to allow this to happen. We have been assured that they would make sure that the systems are in place. They don't want to give away all of the details of those systems because part of security is people not knowing all the things that they're doing to make sure nothing can go wrong. But I assure you, from my perspective and the members of our committee who voted out unanimously, two were absent, so you'll see the two absents, that they have assured us that before any plan is approved by the Secretary of State to allow that to happen, safeguards will be in place to assure that no information can get out ahead of time. That was really important to all of us on the committee. We felt that with all the information given, looking at the system that has been doing it for a while, and there have been no problems with that system, that this kind of security system can be in place. What happens when we don't is that we get very late returns. This would allow us at that first 8 o'clock return opportunity, much of the work would have already been done. It also means that we don't have to have overtime being paid all of our elections people and bringing in this whole herd of people to work all that night, because a lot of the stuff can be done ahead of time, I think, more cautiously and carefully. I believe it is a good bill. It's one of those where the clerks came in mass and supported it, so I appreciated that as well. I urge and I support for us to get move forward in the elections process so that we as citizens at that 8 o'clock day will have more accurate information to understand what's going on the election night. Thank you. Please vote aye on House Bill 3451A.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Riley votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. House Bill 3451A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3471, relating to inter-county adoptions of children in custody of the Department of Human Services and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 3471A. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3471 comes to you from your House Human Services Committee with a unanimous do-pass recommendation. Data shows that foster children placed with family members have better outcomes. So it is state policy that whenever possible, family members are the first choice for permanent placement of our children. Sometimes those family members live out of state or even infrequently out of country. The department does not place a significant number of children in international adoptive placements. Since 1999, Oregon's Department of Human Services has placed only 27 children out of our country. By comparison, the department places about 1,000 children per year within the United States. But when those families do live outside the country, monitoring the well-being of those children is very important. Our DHS caseworkers must be in frequent contact with authorities in other countries to assure compliance. House Bill 3471 and its companion piece, Senate Bill 10, that will soon come before us, is a technical bill that works to correct that situation by utilizing the provisions of the Hague Convention on Protection of Children and Cooperation in Respect of International Adoption. This took effect in April 2008. The convention sets international standards and procedures for adoptions between ratifying countries, providing safeguards for the children and families who are involved in international adoption. Staff from the Oregon Department of Human Services have been in close consultation with the Department of State and Oregon Department of Justice for several months to develop additional procedures and rules that comply with the convention and the Inter-Country Adoption Act. As a result of this work, the department has strengthened its requirements for international home studies and placement supervision agreements to include frequency of face-to-face visitation and reporting requirements, and to make sure written agreements and compliance criteria are in place before a child can be placed internationally. Without such written agreements completed in advance, placement will not occur. By working through the Department of State and the designated central authority in the receiving country, the Department of Human Services can better monitor compliance, assuring that foreign authorities make appropriate and frequent home visits, talk with the child, with the family members, and with other individuals who deal directly with the child. Colleagues, it is our responsibility to set in place policies that protect our children, whether they are in Oregon or in other countries. House Bill 3471 does just that. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill, please.
To the bill.
Thank you. I've had the opportunity, I don't know if it's a pleasure, but the opportunity to participate in the Senate Review Committee with my friend from Gold Beach and the good carrier of the bill, among others. Since 2005, last session, Senators Cruz and Brown and my friend from Gold Beach and I sponsored several bills that passed unanimously on both floors that helped the foster care termination of parental rights process. Unfortunately, all these cases are different, and unfortunately, we don't bat 1,000. Sometimes we fail, which has led us to some of these changes. This bill will help us get closer to perfection, which is what we need when we're dealing with the most vulnerable members of our society who need all the help we can give them. This bill gets us closer to that. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Tomei, do you wish to close?
No, I do not, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Harker votes aye. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. House Bill 3471A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials, and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and HJM 15 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on the Monday, May 4th, 2009 calendar. The carrier is excused today. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Due to a number of people being out of the building today, the House Education Committee will not be meeting today. Thank you.
Colleagues, a couple of announcements about schedule. First of all, if you have not heard today, due to the presence of a large rally on all sides of the Capitol, the garage, there was earlier notice that the garage is definitely going to be inaccessible after 12:30. If you're planning to leave the garage, you may want to make sure you're out by noon just to be on the safe side because the rally could begin earlier than expected. And the exit to the garage is still having some functioning problems unrelated to the rally, so you probably want to leave by the entrance. So exit out of the entrance, and you want to exit ideally by noon. It's going to be closed then for a period of time, inaccessible, should be accessible at least again by 2:30. So if you're leaving, you should be able to come back safely and access the garage after 2:30. A couple of scheduled notes for next week. That I think you received previous notice about the fact that we're having a floor session at 8:30 a.m. on Monday. Floor session at 8:30 a.m. on Monday. In addition to that, we're going to try and squeeze some additional time out throughout the rest of the week to try and get all the rest of the House bills over to the Senate. So you don't need to write this down today. You'll be getting a notice will be going to your staff so it can go on your schedules. But on Tuesday, the House will convene at 9:45. On Wednesday next week at our regular 10:15 time, on Thursday at 9:45, and on Friday we'll convene at 10:15, but then continue on until we get through the calendar. So that could continue on through the lunch hour and potentially into the early afternoon. So hopefully with that schedule, we'll be able to get through all the House bills, get them over the Senate to begin work on them. Further announcements, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask unanimous consent to suspend the rules in order to allow Representative Wingart to change his vote on House Bill 2014. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Nolan requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules to allow Representative Wingart to change his vote on House Bill 2014. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Wingart, how do you vote?
No.
Wingart votes no. Further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the Grants Pass High School Marching Band is a group of dedicated young musicians who have demonstrated their musical prowess time and time again. Led by a dynamic teaching staff and supported by a vigorous booster club, they have achieved many honors. I am pleased to announce that the Grants Pass High School Marching Band has been invited to take part in the 2010 Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York City. Join me extending a hearty congratulations to them and their enthusiastic supporters. Go Cavemen.
All right. Further remonstrances. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Rip City is back in Oregon. I hope you will join me in congratulating the Portland Trail Blazers on an outstanding season that exceeded all expectations. And although that season ended yesterday, we have, at the end of this season, a second consecutive All-Star selection for Brandon Roy, 54 wins, and an incredibly talented young crew that is headed into next year. So I hope you will join me in congratulating the Portland Trail Blazers.
Representative Van Orben.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to apologize for not referring to my dear friend from southwestern Clackamas County by that title as opposed to his, as I did in his name. But I would also like to suggest Big Print.
Representative Stigler.
Not to be outdone by my fellow caveman back there. I just learned yesterday that the Bend High School culinary arts class for the third year in a row took national on restaurant management. Go Lava Bears.
Yes.
Further remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House adjourn until Monday, May 4th at 8:30 a.m.
Representative Tomei moves that the House adjourn until 8:30 a.m. on Monday, May 4th, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.